Thank you, Mr. Kinsella, and good afternoon to everybody. In 1997, NBC Dateline, I don't know if any of you watched that show, I think it still airs, does it? Okay. They aired an episode of their program, and it was titled Follow the Leader. Somebody at Sprague High School, where I was working at the time, recorded the episode, then using the school's in-house television system or network, it was shown to the whole school during the daily announcement period. It was only about 10 minutes long, maybe even a little less, but it had a powerful and thought-provoking message. And it appeared to have some impact on the kids because it had to do with peer pressure. I got a copy of that recording and actually showed it at church during sermonette time back in 1998. Some of you were here at that time. Does that sound familiar at all? Well, maybe, maybe not. After 24 years, I'd like to show it again, but I think we probably violated copyright issues when we did it the first time, so I figured, no, we better not. Instead, I will try to, a picture's worth 1,000 words, I'll try to use less than 1,000 words. I'll try to succinctly describe it in a way that you can visualize. It opened by asking the question, how far will people go to please the crowd? It began with a brief segment from the old Candid Camera television show from the early 1960s. Candid Camera, for those of you who are maybe too young to know, would set up some contrived situation, and then they'd have a hidden camera to record the reaction or the reaction of unsuspecting subjects who just happened to come into that rather peculiar situation. And the results were often quite humorous. In this one particular segment, an unsuspecting man is shown inside an elevator, or just coming into an elevator, and he's in a strange predicament when everybody else suddenly turns to face the back wall. He looks confused. He doesn't know whether to go inside and face out or outside and face back. Eventually, he just turns and he faces the back wall of the elevator like everybody else. Then they show another man who's already gotten into the elevator, and he's facing the back wall with the rest of the elevator's occupants. But when the door opens on the next floor, there's a camera up there too, the camera shows everybody, including the confused subject, now facing the right-hand wall of the elevator. Then on some prearranged signal, they all turn again, including, a brief moment later, the unsuspecting subject. Over and over, the unsuspecting subjects react in the same way, like sheep, turning in whichever direction the crowd did. Although it was just for laughs, the announcer states, Candid Camera raises some serious questions about conformity. Would you be strong enough to stand up for yourself, even if you're a minority of only one? And just how powerful is the pull of negative group pressure? To find out, the Dateline producers then asked a psychology professor and some of his students at the University of California, Santa Cruz, to replicate, I guess, what's a classic conformity experiment or study that was done in the 1950s. They used a simple exercise in which seven test subjects, actually seven college students at this time, are asked to match, let me show you here, you are to match the one line on the right with the line of the same length on the left. Except they go from something like this to something like this to something like this, where the answer should be pretty obvious. But seven subjects are seated in a room, evenly spaced at tables in a U-shaped configuration, so that they can see and hear each other give their answers. They are told that they are part of a visual perception test. Then they're shown the series of cards with the line segments and asked to match the segments of equal length. Six of the seven subjects, however, are not really subjects. They're actually plants. They're actually psychology students just pretending to be the subjects in the experiment. And one by one, each of the seven then is asked to identify the matching line segment. The actual test subject is always seated in spot number six, so that he can hear the five answers, the five responses before, and then one answer after him. The actual experiment is to see how that one test subject reacts when the other six all give the same obviously wrong answer. And they even show, like on this one, everybody says A is the correct answer. And so what is that one person in slot six going to do? Well, to help draw the subject in and make the exercise more convincing, the plants initially give the correct answer on the first few rounds of cards, that is. But then they wonder, will they conform by giving answers that they know are wrong, or will they defy the group and answer correctly? The camera then focuses in on the subject in spot number six as the rest of the group intentionally begins giving absurdly wrong answers. And you watch as they focus in on three of the subjects. They actually did 16 different people, but they focused in on three of them with the camera here and showed those three. All of them defy the group and give the correct answers for a few rounds. But as the rounds continue, you see the subjects become more and more uncomfortable and even sad-looking until two of them finally give up and they join the group and they give the same absurdly wrong answers. The third one they show actually holds out and gives the correct answers all the way through. She didn't conform, but it looked very, very painful for her. When she was interviewed afterward, she said, "There was a lot of pressure in that room, a lot of tension. I can see where someone would just buckle and give in." She didn't like being different, she said, but I didn't want to be wrong either. The other two said similar things about the pressure of being different. "I just gave up," one of them said. I knew I wasn't doing it right, and after a while, I didn't even look. I just answered and did what everybody else did. The other one said, I consider myself a nonconformist, and he looked the part. He was a little bit older, and he was an artist, and he had kind of wild hair. But he said, "I didn't want to be different anymore. The pressure got to me, and I caved in. Even though I knew what I was saying wasn't the truth, it made me more comfortable. It made him more comfortable not to be different." In this particular study, over half the subjects, 9 out of 16, gave in to the negative group pressure. Kept a copy of the video, and about 10 years later, I showed it to a new set of students at the school where I was teaching, my high school math classes. And they found it very thought-provoking. And you could tell they were thinking, "Well, I wonder what I would have done." And then somebody noticed, Sally isn't here today. Hey, Mr. Hansen, you know what we ought to do? We should pretend that you want to do a visual perception experiment and call for 7 random students to sit in the front row and then see if we can get Sally to sit in spot number 6 when she comes back. The rest of us will know what to do, and we'll see what Sally does. At the time, that thought sounded like a good idea. I hadn't really thought it all the way through. So the next class, when Sally came back, we did our version of the conformity test, or the visual perception test. It happened to be an upper-level honors Algebra 2 class, I think it was at the time, but the results were a little disappointing. Sally was somewhat reluctant to be a participant, and she gave in right away, and she followed the crowd. She just gave whatever everybody else said, she just did the same thing right from the start. And at some point I realized, and I think most of the class did, that there wasn't really a good way to wrap this up and bring closure to it without making Sally feel bad and embarrassing her. So I just said, well, that's interesting. I guess we'll just do math. And we just dropped it. And another class, so this was a lower level class, kind of where you teach grade school math to high school kids. They wanted to do it, but the absent student was a little ninth grader. I'll call him Bobby. And after seeing what happened in the earlier class, I was a little reluctant to potentially embarrass Bobby in front of the whole class. He wasn't very big, and he looked like he could be easily intimidated. But one of the kids says, hey, Mr. Hansen, remember yesterday you said you'd show us a visual perception test, you know? Yeah, Mr. Hansen, remember, you promised, you know? And so, okay, well, I guess we got to do it. And so we went ahead, we set it up, and we got Bobby to sit in seat number 6. He was a little reluctant as well. The other 6, they were fine. You know, oh, yeah, I'll do it, Mr. Hansen. And he was reluctant, but surprisingly, he seemed quite confident in defining the group when they gave the wrong answers. And as we went on, he did get increasingly kind of puzzled and confused looking as he answered, but he did not give in. Finally, after answering the last one correctly, he looked at the other kids in the front row and he says, what's the matter with you guys? Are you on drugs or something? Are you on crack? He really said that. And of course, we all kind of laughed And we explained what was going on, and thought it was kind of interesting. The girl in the upper level math class caved in right away, and then the little ninth grader in the lower level class, he stuck with the truth. He didn't give in to peer pressure. He was not afraid to be different. And for a kid that age, that was pretty impressive. It takes a certain amount of courage, especially at that age, I think, to be a minority of one and to stand up against the crowd, and maybe even more so, to be outspoken about it. And you wonder, do we as Christians always have that kind of courage? Would the pressure to conform ever cause us to abandon the truth? Would it ever cause us to maybe compromise the truth or to compromise our values? Let's go to Romans 12. Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. There's nothing necessarily wrong with being a conformist. It's a matter of whose values are we going to conform to? God's values or the world's values? Romans 12, verses 1 and 2, and this is often a youth camp memory scripture in some of our young adults and youth are probably, maybe they were even thinking this right away. Romans 12, verse 1. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Verse 2. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed. Transform your conformity by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. It's the will of God that we resist conforming to the world. We resist conforming to the standards and the values that are presented in the world. And as we see around us now, the values of this world are becoming increasingly different from God's values. We need to be prepared to be different. And in some cases, be prepared to be hated because we're different. You could turn to John 15, 18. As you've probably noticed, there are groups now in American society that do not tolerate beliefs that are contrary to theirs. They don't want you to be different. Our beliefs about marriage, morality, abortion, even how you define men and women, the whole transgender issue, go on here. Those do not conform to the so-called woke standards, I guess you'd say, that we see being promoted today. We can notice in John 15, 18, where Jesus is giving a warning to his disciples on the night before his crucifixion. John 15, 18, if the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. It's natural to want to be loved by those around us and those we come in contact with. We want to be liked by people. Yet because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If you kept my word, they will keep yours also. The pressure to conform to negative worldly standards could come in a lot of different ways. Over the years, we've seen numerous examples of business owners and others who get harassed, they get intimidated, and even sued simply for trying to uphold some semblance of what they see as Christian values. You could think of the cake bakers, the decorators up in Portland area that they refused to decorate a cake for a gay wedding. And they got sued for it and put out of business. A company might work for, they might mandate equity, diversity, and inclusion training. I notice that's coming into the Salem School District now. And more than likely, that training will include values that just are not consistent with our values. Even the entertainment that we watch has become more and more overt in presenting some very ungodly lifestyles in a positive light. And it's something that we need to be careful about, especially maybe in the presence of our children. Because young people can be extremely susceptible to just following the crowd. They want to fit in. They want attention. They want to conform. But the standards now that people are conforming to are really low. And I see it in the schools. Yes, I'm retired, but I'm still substitute teaching. And I see the behavior. I see the language, the way the kids dress, even the way they use their cell phones. There are a lot of things that seem acceptable now because to a lot of those kids, everybody else is doing it. Why can't I do it? Everybody else does it. I was in the hall during passing time, and when I was substituting recently, I was talking with another teacher that I'd taught with for years, and some students were walking by, and they were looking like they were going to a beach party. And I commented to the teacher, and I asked, well, isn't that against the school dress code? And no, she says, there is no school dress code anymore. I said, what? No dress code? She says, well, technically there might be one, but it's almost worthless. The district is completely abdicated. They've given up. I was curious, so I went to their webpage, Salem School District webpage, and I looked up dress code on their website. On the website, it states, number one, basic principle, certain body parts must be covered for all students at all times. Clothing must be worn in a way such that, changing the wording a little bit here just to make it family friendly, believe it or not, clothes must be worn in such a way such that, I'll say, the gender identifying parts of one's anatomy are fully covered with opaque, non-see-through fabric. Well, I began to wonder, that means clothes don't really have to cover much. But then it go and down in the page a little bit, it does add, I was wondering about, well, swimsuits. Swimsuits are not allowed. Okay. Unless as part of a class activity. But you would assume that it would be a swim class, except none of the schools in Salem have swimming pools. So you wonder about that. It does go on to state, however, though, that pajamas are allowed. You can wear your pajamas to school. Does not even mention the word modest or modesty. Although some of the students probably would have absolutely no clue as to what that word means, just the way I see them dressed there. Not all of them, however. There are a few nonconformists. I'll hand it to those students, or maybe their parents. There is a significant Latter-day Saint Mormon population at the school where I usually substitute and where I taught. And you can tell that with a lot of those kids, there is parental oversight. There is parental involvement. Maybe the school district has abdicated, but those parents have not. And I'll hand it to them for that. So parents, you need to be prepared. You need to be preemptive. And I'm not necessarily referring just to dress code issues. We need to condition our kids ahead of time concerning many issues. You know, kids, be prepared to stand up for yourself, even if it's a lonely situation, because we have to teach them that, you know, you've got to conform to God's standards. You've got to conform to God's values. If you have a chance to look up and watch the YouTube video. I've seen it recently. YouTube video. It is the NBC Dateline. NBC Dateline, Follow the Leader. It's only about 8 minutes long or so. And might be a good idea to watch it and discuss it as a family. But basically, it's what I described, but those pictures are worth more than my words, I think. In our struggle to live according to the truth, according to God's standards and God's values, we are becoming overwhelmingly outnumbered by those who conform to different standards. And our struggles can sometimes seem like a very lonely one, a very lonely struggle, especially when we're physically separated from other brethren. And sometimes our kids are, if they're going to a public school. Got to brace ourselves for it. How can we encourage ourselves? Well, just remember that there are more of us out there, even if we're alone at the time. You know, there are other people that they would stand up like they're hoping you would in that situation. And we are never alone. We are never truly alone. Joshua 1:9, you don't have to turn there. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed. Don't be afraid to be different, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go, even if you're a minority of one. So let's strive hard to conform to God's standards and resist the negative pressure to conform to the wrong standards of the world around us. It's not easy to be different, but it's worse to be wrong.